woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al Ricky on the board. SP Futures up 50 cents. Yeah, 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 4. So but this morning we're in the holiday week for sure. We'll see if we stay there. We may not. Do we have Professor Carl?
You do, but all of a sudden they're down $2.25.
Well,
$2.50.
Well, 2.5 is nothing. We go 50, 60 points in the NASDAQ in a couple of months.
Well, I know. When you said 50, I thought you meant, you know, 50 handles.
No, 50 cents.
You know, it's, you're always a little crazy betting against a generally bottom left to upper right movement in the week between, the 2 weeks between the week before Christmas and, you know, wherever it falls. And
we have had others. New Year's. Remember this Christmas Eve, we were down 600 points a few years ago?
Oh, it happens, okay. But, I mean, if statistically speaking, right?
Yep.
I mean, if there was a 2 week period, if you could only play in 1 2 week period every year, and you had to make a directional bet, you couldn't pick individual names or whatever, you had to just make a general directional bet, I would take this 2 week period and I would be long.
Yes.
And, you know, and yeah, there are going to be times that, you know, that I take a fastball to the nads doing that. But most of the time, that's going to pay. So
that's, well, they do have these, you know, calendar sort of things. And actually, this is a, boy, oh boy, this was a, it's been so long since I've been to a Cub game, Carl. But one night, I was invited to somebody's skybox. I forget who the hell it was. And then there was a guy who was, I don't know if he's still in the business, if he's still alive or what he is, just a while ago. And he was saying that he researched, I don't know how many different companies, for calendar trends.
Yeah.
And he had a few. Toys R Us was a big one back when they were around. Hershey's was a big one. I don't know if that even happens anymore. But he had probably 10 or 15 that he had said was, was statistically, whatever you want to say it, correct or whatever, that was something that passed statistics muster, just wasn't random.
Right.
And I think you can talk about, you know, end-of-the-year rallies, but then again, you have to look at, you know, the year itself. This year, I'd say the answer is probably yes, but now the question is, you know, how far is this administration going to go in making us the Weimar Republic? I mean, if they do that, we're going to keep going, right? But I've got,
well, okay, there's, boy, oh boy, oh boy, is that a, is, Chief, come on, man, that's two-dimensional thinking, and the world isn't two-dimensional. I understand, you know, look, in the short term, you know, if you just look at stuff from a, yeah, okay, it's a defensible point of view, right? I mean, it is, you know, I mean, it's a divisor thing, right? I mean, it's just kind of like the Tao is. but there's a problem with this, in that at the end of the day, when you go a little further than that, and this is, I put an article up, you know, Vance was running, it's been this whole thing, you know, the TPUSA, you know, had their confab a few, you know, over the last few days, right? And you have this huge blow up right now going on in so-called conservative, and I say so-called because my question to people who claim to be conservative is always, what are you trying to conserve?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Just like for someone who's and by the way, I'm an equal opportunity a-hole when it comes to this, because when somebody says they're a liberal, my next question is, what are you trying to liberate?
Well, that's the truth, you know.
Well, and if you get a blubbering, you know, baby kind of answer to either one of those, the person's a tool. They're, you know, they've made a decision, but they don't have a reason why. I have no problem with anybody taking a political position as long as they have some kind of justification for it that adds. Okay, I mean, it's just if it pencils, okay, fine. Let's have a debate on whether it pencils, because that's how you actually change people's minds, rather than just calling somebody a racist or an anti-Semite or, you know, whatever. But the thing is there's this war going on right now, because you've got, you know, on the one hand, you got people that are after Tucker Carlson because he actually interviewed Nick Fuentes. Okay, so now interviewing somebody gets you canceled.
Oh, yeah, right? it's crazy. Yeah.
It's not saying you agree with the guy's point of view, okay, but you know, isn't it interesting that the reaction to the the attack that happened in Australia, which, by the way, said you can't have any guns, okay? What was that, like 10, 15 years ago, okay? Then somehow this guy who is not a citizen, okay, he's an immigrant, but he's legally in the country, has 6 guns, okay? How excuse me?
Well, there's a difference between 6 and like 300 million like we have here.
Well, no, he personally had 6 guns, okay? I mean, okay, how, you know, I mean, that's, you know, on an average basis, that's more guns than the average American has, right? But, you know, he has 6 guns. But that's, you know, that shows the futility of the idea that, you know, weapons are the.
So you're saying 300 million is better than 6?
Well, I'm saying that when the guy's got several explosive devices in the trunk of his car,
I think
banning firearms is kind of stupid.
If we ever decided to ban guns here, how many? I'm not advocating that, but if we, how many centuries would it take to get them out of people's closets and basements?
Well, you'd probably have plenty of people who would choose to use them rather than give them up. So that's, you know, anybody dumb enough to try that in the United States deserves
I think we may get there.
You know what? If we get there, it's going to be when an Austrian painter shows up, and what's probably going to come after that is something like Rwanda.
Somewhere, and I don't know what the situation is, but the right of somebody to not get shot has to supersede at some point the right of somebody to shoot somebody really damn well please.
Well, okay, except the problem is the right of somebody to not get shot ought to include the right of somebody to not take a board spiked with nails to the face like happened to that gal out in Seattle yesterday.
How come we didn't, when Timothy McVeigh blew up the Oklahoma City thing, you know, we're part... Carl, on the politics, is once I totally ditch both parties,
yeah,
the world seemed to become a lot clearer to me as to who's doing what where. It's become big versus small. Everybody who talks, I just listened on the way in this morning to a Bloomberg report, and how many people in small businesses are so MAGA because they thought, you know, all the minorities were getting all the business, and how last year the amount of small business money coming from government had dropped precipitously because it's all going to the big guys.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said, when somebody says they're conservative, I ask them, what are you conservative? Somebody says they're liberal, what are you trying to liberate? And the bottom line, though, is that, so Australia's answer to this isn't, because they already did no guns, and that obviously didn't work. Guy had a ton of guns. No, their answer is, if you say something mean about Jewish people, you should go to jail. All right. Now, excuse me? If you want to know where the problem is, it's when I can't have a debate and a criticism.
Without a doubt.
All right. Because you know what? The AP style guide, this is the actual Associated Press. You can't write an article that goes in the Associated Press that doesn't comply with the style guide.
Well, we have a leader here who in 2 years, him and his pals, Ellison and the rest of them, are going to control every piece of media.
Well,
and anybody who doesn't see that is blind.
Well, yeah, but by the way, the AP style guide says that if you use black in an article, it must be capitalized. But if you use the word white, and again, we're talking about descriptions of people, it must not be. Okay?
That's unbelievable. What do you think about the 60 Minute thing getting pulled?
Well, the obvious question, which Barry Weiss has not answered, by the way, which makes it look especially bad, and it probably is, okay, is why? Because, and the reason that I point that out is that standing alone without something further, it's a six-month-old rehashed story, which, by the way, 60 Minutes has covered before, okay? So 60 Minutes, at least theoretically in the past, I know we're talking about, a world that doesn't exist anymore, without something more, didn't have a reason to run that
in
the first place.
But this is not the first time we have offshored our torture.
No, I'm saying this specific issue, okay, the whole Venezuelan, the CECOP thing, right? This specific issue is a six-month-old story. Well, now 60, and it has been extensively reported on. So the question becomes, where did this get ginned up through the chain?
Well, maybe.
But why was it spiked? Now I don't know why it was spiked. The so-called official reason is because the Trump administration wouldn't give them a comment on it. Well, that's not a reason to spike a story.
No, because allegedly the rule is, or the rule, the convention is, boy, there's no rules anymore. I was listening to some guy ask, this is what he said, who the hell knows. He said you always, if you do it correctly, you always ask for a comment.
Yeah.
He said, but if you don't get a comment, you run it anyway.
Well, hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I
mean, not getting a comment, if that becomes a reason to not publish a story, we're in big trouble.
Like I said, that's not the reason. Okay, that's the excuse,
yeah.
But that's not the reason. Because how many times, good God, I read across the media aisle, okay, although that's becoming more and more difficult unless you pay because, it used to be, I bought a subscription to the Wall Street Journal because I wanted the paper on my desk in my office when I had one in Chicago, right? And it was literally sitting there every morning on the front desk when I came in because they had a delivery boy that came around and dropped them off, or a delivery girl. I don't know if it was a boy or a girl, but it was a delivery person.
So maybe it was a drone.
Probably not in 1995.
You never know. They might have beamed it in there. Scotty
Scotty might have beamed it in. But I mean, it was there every morning when I got to work, okay? The Wall Street Journal, if you're a business person and you're paying attention to various areas, it was worth it.
Well, but how do you decide when, when we had Diane on 6 weeks ago? By the way, you were a terrific contributor to this, so you're guilty or innocent, depending on how you answer the question.
Uh-oh.
She talked about all the mental problems that are going on with veterans.
Yeah.
Right, so we spent, not every day, but pretty much the better part of 2 weeks talking about that from every angle we could come up with, considering the resources we have. The resources we have are really bright people. It's not like we can send reporters out or anything. And you could say, hey, you guys mentioned that 3 weeks ago, you're beating a dead horse. Or you could say, maybe we need a little more of a reminder because this is pretty awful. I mean, there's a fine line there. I mean, the fact that we sent somebody to a country they didn't even come from to be in some jail and treated I'm not so sure that doesn't deserve a reminder every once in a while.
Well, I'm not, you know, like I said, I would like to have an answer to the questions. I'm not going to get one. All right. You know, but then again, I would also like to know why it is that there has been no mainstream coverage of the fact that the FDA's own internal scientific panel said that the clot shots caused the death of several children. Okay, they reviewed the evidence, not me, not the actual government scientists, and said, by the way, this meets the legal criteria for a black box warning. Not say take it off the market, but it gets a black box warning. Well, a black box warning by law has to go on any drug that causes serious permanent damage in people when used as prescribed. Okay, by law. And the FDA's official decision was not to put it on there. And by the way, the reason they didn't put it on there is because if you do that, it cannot be advertised on a follow-up or maintenance basis for any condition. It can still be prescribed because there are plenty of drugs that
wait
are dangerous.
Wait a minute. Do you realize how much the quarterbacks of the NFL are gonna bitch if you pull some of the advertising? How much they might get paid a little less.
Oh, not only that, but the local grocery store. Walk in the grocery store. Get your updated flu and RSV and COVID shots today. No, you could do the flu one. Because that doesn't have black box warning, but you can't ever...
By the way, I heard some commercial the other day about... Not commercial, but a news story, and the lady was talking about the disease control, and now we're up to like 4 million of these flu cases this year. I mean, Audrey had it, a few people had it. And the person is talking about whatever flu it is, and evidently it's not the one that's in the shot.
It's not in the shot,
yeah.
Right. Right. But here's the fun part of that.
Which is hard. You know, it's hard to do to get the right one. But still,
Chief, it's a guess. Yeah. Okay. But here's the thing that I have that I've been railing about now for the last several years, is that it costs about a nickel to have adequate vitamin D levels. All right, and virtually nobody in the United States does. And literally nobody does in the wintertime.
My doctor said any male above Atlanta probably has vitamin D problems.
It's probably vitamin D deficient, correct. Yeah. Now, you have enough supplementation in milk and things like this that you don't get rickets, all right, as a kid. However, that has nothing to do with actual healthy levels. It just has enough to do with, you know, not ending up with your legs bowed. So, okay, fine, except it costs no money to solve this.
Well, you know, just because you take a vitamin D pill doesn't mean you absorb it either. That's a problem.
Chief, I got news for you. All right. Until I start doing this, which came when I started digging into the so-called recommendations during the crazy and found that pretty much everything that they were telling me for the last 55 years have been lies. Until I started digging into all of that, I was not using a daily supplement. Since then, I have been. Now, throughout my entire adult life, I typically would get a couple of fairly significant, including one nasty upper respiratory infection, you know, like pretty much everybody does,
yeah.
Right? You get
usually,
a cold or a flu.
Even if you think you're through it, you get one like the last week or something.
Yeah, and so, you know, but typically I'd get pounded pretty good like once a year. Okay, and then I'd have a couple of, those are kind of annoying, but not really terrible. But typically I'd get pounded about once a year. I have not had one measurable upper respiratory infection in 4 years.
Well,
not one. Since I got COVID.
It could be, in the immortal words of Audrey's dad, you're getting old enough where you've had them all before.
Chief, I have not had, that is never... No, well, H3N2, no. But I have that has never happened. The other thing is, and this is also very interesting, is that, and it takes several months for your vitamin D levels to come up and stabilize because it's fat soluble. Okay,
yeah.
So it's not something you can fix in like an hour. Or, you know, you take a pill, it's all okay. No, that's not how it works. Here's the other thing, though. I have always had problems with seasonal allergies.
throughout my entire life.
Really?
All right. Since I was a little kid, and I've had to dodge, the way I've dodged them is by rotating through various over-the-counter allergy meds. And the reason I have to rotate through them is because they all build tolerance. They don't, that's not on the label, but they all do. All right. And so if you don't do that, they stop working. And then when you stop taking them, the rebound effect is horrible.
Well, you also get, I want to ask you a bunch of other stuff, but you also, as you, I'll use the word mature, your allergies sort of rotate in your body a little bit somewhat.
Well, okay. All right. Explain this one to me. For the last year and a half, I've had absolutely zero.
Well,
by the way, I'm still living in the same place.
I'm just saying, just my own. I'm not an expert on this. Never expected to be. But when I was young in the summertime, you didn't want to be near me. When the ragweed was out, I sneezed every 30 seconds. Went through four handkerchiefs in an hour. It was ridiculous. I mean,
it was horrible. Yeah.
I mean, especially when you drove in a car with the windows open, like through Indiana or someplace. It was like,
Chief, you're describing me, okay? The other thing is, I have a cat, but I am mildly allergic to cats. Now, I put up with that, but guess what? That's gone.
Well, I'm saying all of a sudden that stopped, and I mean, and 1 year all of a sudden I just didn't have it, and about 15, 20 years ago I got some bug, and the Z-Pak didn't work.
Yeah.
So the doctor said, well, you got to try some of this stuff. It wasn't penicillin, it was amoxicillin or something like that. And as a kid, I had tonsillitis bad, and they couldn't take it out. They didn't take tonsils out till you were like 3 or 4 or something.
Yeah.
So maybe like every 2 weeks, I still remember the doctor would show up at the house with like the harpoon shot and right in the ass. The thing was big as a bus, and I never had any problem. And all of a sudden, I get this amoxicillin, and I'm looking at my head going, God, my head looks like it got a little bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, all of a sudden, I'm allergic to that. And I never was. I mean,
Well, but that's true for most allergies, okay, is that the first exposure sensitizes you and the second one pounds you. And then from then on, you got trouble. But, it's like one of the reasons that I've warned people about working with, like, epoxies, okay, is that the same thing's true for chemical sensitization. And God help you if you need to be able to be around that stuff because of your work or whatever, right? I mean, it literally will end career.
I think the other dudes are calling in, but we'll see.
Not yet.
I want to ask you a question. I mean, there's nobody that. I love to agree with your thoughts, but I'm not so sure I agree with a lot of the solutions. But we just had a thing here in Chicago, and this bill, and the city is in such bad shape that finally, the alderman got up and revolted sort of against the mayor. And
that'd be nice, and
they did, you know. So now you could say finally the place budgetary wise hit rock bottom. And
well, now, it's a mess. Yeah.
Okay, but and a lot of the stuff we talk about on the show, I mean, what I'm trying to get, I started yesterday with John Flanagan, and I know that the drug companies and the idea that people spend way too much money here, and oh, by the way, so I heard a story the other day that I can't believe it. It almost makes you want to go, well, I don't have a gun. somebody was telling me about a friend of theirs that had a slight lump somewhere, not somewhere, like slight lump in her breast.
Right.
Doctor said, well, it's only a centimeter. Let's not worry about it for a while or something. Well, then all of a sudden they decide they're going to do something. It's like 12.
Right.
Well, now she's on, you know, some kind of chemo and maybe makes it, maybe doesn't. And it's going to be a $250,000 deal, and the lady might not even. So, the care factor here is like zero.
Yeah, exactly.
And they get the money. Now, my question is, in order to kind of turn this bus around to get some of these expenses back to where they ought to be, because this is you know, there's no question. You can disagree with Carl on a million things, but there's no question that we're having a serious problem here, both in terms of medical expenses. And B, if you cut back on it, you're losing people. They're not getting anything, right? So wherever you want to start, whether on the conservative side or the liberal side, the fact is it's a mess. I mean, if you're in the middle, you look at it and go, I don't care who did what. The fact is it's a mess. Now the question is, how deep and how dark are people compromised by the drug companies in the hospital system. I mean, if you...
Chief...
I'm going to ask you the same question I asked John yesterday. If the two of us, can you imagine us the two-headed knuckleheads, if we were plunked in the Oval Office and we were to say, we're going to take 10 people from either side of the aisle down to Camp David, maybe give them a glass of wine and say, all right, I'd be blunt. You know that I can be blunt. All right, guys, maybe I shouldn't have, but I just went through all your contributions over the last 20 years you've been in politics. And I can tell every one of you how much money you got from drug companies, from big hospital groups, by whatever. Now,
insurance firms.
And you know what? It's a ton of dough. But here's what I want you to tell me right now, because you're drinking my wine. Are you totally compromised? I mean, how compromised are you? Is to the point where no matter what bill somebody put, no matter what fix they put out there, you're going to vote no? Or is it gone so far that even you have to say, well, they didn't buy me enough to let people die or to let people not get cared for or the country to go bust? Did they really buy you that much, is my question.
Well, of course they did, because you know what they did? They sent at the last one of these little confabs you were at, they sent a 15-year-old boy or girl in there and got you to take them up to your hotel room.
And they
had a camera running in the room when you did it.
Okay, so my question is we talked on the top, all right, which I guess that's the top in my mind.
Yeah.
Okay, but let's talk on the bottom. You know, I'm running for representative. Boy, that'd be something. And all of a sudden, I get a check for $2,000 from Pfizer.
Right.
Well,
so
I don't
what?
I don't think they bought me for $2,000. I mean, where's the middle ground? I'm trying to figure out exactly what the numbers are. And I went back to the same story. You know, who was producing the show, Matt Byrne yesterday. I go, what they say in a Animal House? Matt's a sneaky little shit. Who was that? Niedermeyer? Who was the guy? Anyway. So he holds a party. You and I and all the rest of the guys on the show show up. We pay him $1,000. Could you imagine us going to the same political party? We give Matt $1,000. So now he gives Joe Jamoke running $15,000. And then, you know, then some pharmaceutical sends him to... At what level do you actually buy somebody? I would think that my $1,000 to show up just to meet the guy and have a couple of cocktails doesn't buy much. I mean, I would think...
No, that's not the problem. The problem is exactly what you just saw. Okay, so, you know, Mandani, you know, gets elected, right? Article up this morning, the ADL is now after basically his entire transition appointee base because they say they're anti-Semitic. So what happens is you tell Pfizer to go stick it in their butt, right? And the next thing you know, AIPAC puts $1 million into your primary campaign on the other side. And if you think that's not the way the game runs, you're wrong. It is. And oh, by the way, then they make a call to the speaker and all your committee assignments get stripped. And you basically sit, and the only thing you can do for the next 2 years is vote yes or no comes up on the floor.
Two questions. One is, boy, I don't want to go down the plank on this.
Well, that's the plank.
Well, I mean, the plank on the Jewish issue. I have never...
It doesn't matter which... It's not just a Jewish thing. It's
I understand, but I'm saying in that particular situation, I am absolutely pro-Israel. I'm pro-Jewish people. But I think there might be a special ring in hell for Netanyahu. So where does that put me? I'm not anti-Jewish. Today's definition means I'm anti-Jewish. No, I'm not. I don't like Trump going down to mess around oil tankers in Venezuela. It doesn't make me anti-American.
Well, neither do I. But here's the thing. My opinion is that anything that's outside the United States ought to have to be registered as a foreign lobbying agency, because it is. All right, period. End of conversation.
Where would be the fun in that? Where's the money?
Well, there's the whole problem, right? Now we're down to where the whole problem is. The largest lobbying group, if you will, if you break it by industry on K Street, is medical and pharmaceutical. And then they have intersections with all kinds of...
You know, it used to be Fannie and Freddie.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah. I know that. But, you know, I mean, even back when you know, during the great financial crisis, one of the very large ones was, of course, the lending and the banking industry, duh. And Fannie Fred was, of course, a subset of that. But even then, the medical side was, you know, all you got to do is look at the names on the doors.
Okay. All right. I'm trying to. I'm with you on all
this. By the way, Joel's up. So all right. Dump me.
All right. Well, we'll see if Kenny comes down. Because the question I want to get back to in Chicago, we did reach the point where finally it got to the government or the alderman shed all the other crap and said, look, we can't shut down. And basically did a revolt. Now, what's it going to take for people in Congress to say, we're either going to absolutely go under with these people? That's going to be more detrimental to me than going back on the guy that just gave me $50,000. Someplace, somewhere, the other side has got to be as strong.
Chief, the only way that it gets stopped is what I said the other day.
Okay, but we'll talk about that. But that's not going to happen. I'm talking about...
No, the only way it stops is for the executive to start jailing people because Congress can't stop it.
Except we don't have any executives like that anymore.
Well, I understand that, but that's the only way it's going to stop.
Plus, if we had one, he'd never get elected.
Well, he's elected now.
This guy, whatever. Don't get me started. But he's taking more money than anybody else has ever, any other president combined. But anyway, let's get to Joel. We'll see if Kenny comes on. Otherwise, we'll talk to you on Friday.
All righty,
Joel. How are you, buddy?
Good, man. You guys got the hot stove discussion going there.
Well, the people in Chicago kind of started it because all of a sudden we hit bottom, and the alderman rose up, and now we have a budget that appears to be anti-mayor, and they rammed it down his throat. I mean, we got to the point where we couldn't get any lower.
That's why they got to don't frown, average down, right?
Yeah.
Just keep buying. But you guys are covering the whole gambit there, and U.S. politics, what I generally like to stay away from. But I will say, Chief, you have some good. Also, I'll say if you got some pretty darn good opinions there. That's
well,
my
I mean,
final
it,
statement.
It's not the politics because I can't believe either party where they are. I just can't even get there. But that's
oh my god.
But what Carl has done in numbers that maybe the rest of us is sort of suspected, and I can talk nice about him, or I'm not talking to him. Is he's actually done an awful lot of work on how far this medical part is going and how much we're paying for all this stuff. And it's going to take the government down. I mean, it's absolutely... your Medicare and Medicaid now is almost double the Defense Department. And it'd be different if everybody was getting really good care, but they're not. There's people who are opting out because it's too expensive even for them. So if you extend the numbers at all, that's the problem in the federal budget. And, you know, and if it continues to go up by 15-20% a year, the numbers just sit there and go, wait a minute, just like the Chicago numbers did. You know, I mean, there's no way that you can, you know, and the Democrats seem to want to keep throwing money at it. The Republicans just want to let people die. Now, that's a little harsh, but, I mean, the fact is, it's got to get fixed. We can't keep paying $50,000 for a chemo to cost $2,000 in India. I mean, anyway, we can change, but I mean, that's what this, and the theme is, okay, everybody's representative or senator has gotten money from the drug companies. What's it going to take for those guys to vote, you know, some barriers here? And are they totally compromised, half compromised, quarter compromised? I mean, you know, I guess that's the question. That's the theme, Joel. Just let you know we're talking.
It's a factor. It's a huge factor. I think there's other factors as well that are going into the deficit. But I mean, everyone is affected by this across the entire spectrum, down from across all different classes. Lower class, middle class, upper class, super upper class. I mean, yeah, it's something that needs to be addressed, and I certainly don't have the answer.
Well, I don't either. I just what I'm trying to get is at least get the questions out there. you're never going to get the answer if you don't ask the question.
True. I'm with you guys on this.
So are you the new head coach of Michigan? That's the question.
What did I? Did I have my epiphany? Was it last week or did I?
Yeah, you were on a roll.
I was on a roll.
A little bit, yeah.
Did I talk about Biff Poggi?
Oh no, who's he?
So he's an assistant that was with Harbaugh early on, maybe pre COVID. Older guy, 66, former hedge fund manager. Okay. Made some good
money. Hey, that doesn't make him bad, does it? I used to do that.
I'm sorry?
That doesn't make him bad. I used to do that.
No, it makes it good. Okay. And then he went to Coastal Carolina. He coached for a few years. Didn't do well. But they brought him back to Michigan. He is an assistant, a special assistant. He's 66 years old. And he was named interim coach for the bowl game. I think that they need to make him... Well, the coach for next year, I would love to see him pull the interim tag and make him the head coach. The thing about Michigan, and I'm the first to admit this, and I hope you're sitting down, is that no one wants the job right now. You don't have a president.
I think you could coerce Joel for $8 million for 10 years.
$8 million? Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it's a tough job.
Let me ask you this, because you know we go into this detail on the show. We don't do this. The rest of the world doesn't do it. What is every school now? I think has to have their own definition. Like I always tell Larissa and Russell, I want to walk into one of your classes and tell the students define profit. Define a coach now. I mean, is the coach in charge of all people who judge people on the portal? Is the coach in charge of all money flying in and out and getting the sponsors to pay the guy to get there? Or is that the general I'll use the term general manager, which they have now, athletic director? Is all that responsibility on him, and he has those 10 people working for him, and the coach just playing coaches? I mean, every one of these coaching jobs has to be defined differently, doesn't it?
I depend at what institution you're at, but at like somewhere like Ohio State, you decide where to spend the money.
So you're saying coach is sort of in charge?
He's in charge of spending the money, getting the players, hiring the coaches and stuff. But
that's a huge job, much bigger than Bo had or Woody had.
Yeah. And then you have the general managers now, which I mean, it's like professional.
That's
you
what
have
I'm saying.
The scout. Yeah. So that's the way I look at it. But just going back to the current situation. You know, Kyle Whittingham, the Utah coach, he's 66 years old, okay? I mean, you're not going to go from Utah, and they're still paying him $3.5 million to be like an administrator there. It's a tough job. And you're also in there with Ohio State. You're with Indiana. We have an absolutely brutal schedule right now. And Michigan just needs to behave. They need to stay out of the New York Post, okay? When you were a kid in school and you got in trouble with the teacher, like you finally aggravated the teacher enough, right? What did you do?
You cooled your jets. Yeah, you tried to be nice for at least a while.
You just shut up and you sat in the back of the class and you just maybe raised your hand to do a contribution or to compliment the teacher. But that's what Michigan needs to do for a year. At least a year. Stay out of the paper. Stay out of, you know, what was that magazine? Not the New York Post, but used to be in grocery stores.
Or the Inquirer. It's still there.
What's it called?
The Inquirer.
The National Inquirer. Yeah. That's what they need to do, and they need to focus on their basketball team and their hockey team, both top rank, and just let the dust settle. And I think by hiring Biff Poggi, they would do that. Offer the job to Dillingham, it's obvious what they're doing. At least it's obvious to me. That's what I think Michigan should do.
What was the name of the industry rag? It's no longer around, where they had to pay. It was four different magazines. One was covered the options industry. One covered the futures. One cover was anybody who got fined for one contract over, his name was in the rag. What's the name of that thing? They were in New York and they claim to be four different papers, but they're all in the same room, same people.
It was like
the Inquirer for the industry.
Yeah, but anyway, Chief, I got to hop. Get ready
right,
for
bud.
My show. Always a pleasure talking to you.
I'll be talking to you tomorrow.
Concentrating on sports lately.
I'll be talking to you tomorrow.
I got you on the docket officially. Actually, that's right. I will send you your invite. We'll have some fun.
Thanks, Chief. I really enjoy coming out here.
Go Blue. Be safe. Be nice. Be safe and treat each other with respect.
Yeah, and hey, come listen to me on Joel's show tomorrow.
Okay. Yep. All right. Thanks, Chief.
Do we have Kenny?
Yes, we do.
Kenny, how are you, bud? Happy, Merry Christmas.
I'm good, and Merry Christmas to you and yours. How's everything?
What they used to say on the floor, Merry bleeping Christmas. Yeah. So what do you got going? It's kind of a, I don't know, Thursday's probably a little better than Wednesday for the Christmas, but we got the half a day tomorrow, and then we got to come in on Friday, and then next week's even more muddled because we got to work all day New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah, all day New Year's Eve. That's the last training day of the year. But actually, Wednesday, tomorrow is the bigger night for me, right? We usually do a big Italian Christmas Eve. We do the Feast of the Seven Fishes, and it's a much bigger night than Christmas Day itself. Christmas Day itself, just, you know, you do the present thing and you relax and do all that stuff. But tomorrow night will be the celebration where we'll do, you know, like I said, the Feast of the Seven Fishes and all the Christmas stuff. And it's a big Italian tradition. I grew up with it. I continued it in my own family. My kids now continue it. So it's just the way it is. How about you?
Well, we're going to my brother's, and he's cooking up some big honking beef brisket that I went to three stores to get last week. And almost got killed by 15 shopping carts in the Costco. Boy, those guys are vicious. Worse than the parking lot. Just saying. I mean, the place is mad, but I can't get over the prices of beef. They had some big prime rib there, a full prime rib. Yep. Guess how much?
And how much?
$330.
My money. For how many people? But that's going to feed a lot of people.
Well, you would hope. But, I mean, it was probably 20 pounds, $18 a pound or something.
Yeah.
But 18 bucks
a
pound?
I don't do beef on Christmas Eve, but we do, you know, all fish. So I do lobster, I do clams, I do calamaris, I do shrimp, scallops, salmon, filet of sole. So and that's also expensive at this time of year as well.
Oh yeah, last year
down here in Florida because it all comes from the Northeast.
You last year you admitted to cooking a couple of different kinds of fish, different ways, and counting them as part of the seven.
Yeah, not the same fish. There would be seven different types of fish, right? It's just got to be seven, whatever it is. So this year it'll be, right? And so it's lobster, it's linguine clam sauce, it's scallops, it's shrimp, it's filet of sole, it's stuffed calamari, and it's salmon.
Well, I was at the Restaurant Depot. The good lobster, the good scallops, boy, they're up there this year.
Yeah. No, I know. I put the order in. I have to go pick it up tomorrow.
Well, you have
the difference is I'm not cooking for, you know, I was in New York and my wife's family was up there. We used to have 60 or 65 people at my house for dinner.
Wow.
On Christmas Eve. It would be a big buffet and all that stuff. But, you know, down here, because the family's not down here, it'll be a much smaller group. There's only be eight of us. So it won't nearly be the size and cost that it was when I was up in New York.
I saved some of the ones. Do you have a spot where all seven of the recipes are in one place?
On my Substack. Yeah, I did the recipes in the early December. So if you go to my Substack, every day, starting, I believe it was December 1st, I put my note, and then the recipe was Feast of the Seven Fishes, number one, number two,
okay.
And then every day I did up till number seven.
All right, I'll go back and see if I can. If I'm missing a day, I might be nagging at you.
You got to go to my Substack, so kennybilkari.substack.com, and then go look at the prior post. Go back to, like, early December. I think I started actually December 1st.
All right, well, so you actually have to buy seven different. Wow, that's, you know, by the way, you got a lot to celebrate this year, and so do we, because you're feeling good, and we love you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. So far, so good, right? I got a great report so far. I got to go back next month in January for another scan. We'll see how that works. But I feel good at the moment, so it's all good.
Well, good for you, and all the people. I mean, your schedule is busy as it's ever been, isn't it? Or maybe even more.
Yeah, no, it's busy as it's ever been, which is good for me because it keeps me busy instead of just sitting around and, you know, wondering and thinking and contemplating what could happen. This way I don't do that. I come to work, I'm busy, I travel, I do the Yahoo podcast, I do stuff like this with you, I do plenty of, you know, television across the media, representing the firm and talking about investments and wealth management and all that stuff. So yes, it keeps me busy. I enjoy that. It's good for me. It's healthy. You know, I keep going to the I go to the gym. I try to fit the gym in there as well to stay kind of physically healthy, and so it's all good. Yeah, nothing to complain about at the moment.
So, and it's, I especially like the part where they still want you, even though you require private jets now.
You're a jerk.
Hey, one thing I need to know here, just one simple thing.
What?
A lot of my even though I will always admit, I'm too honest for myself, you know, I was early on this gold and silver trade, right?
Yeah.
And I looked back a couple of years that I was long silver, and I went from like 28 to 29, right? Yeah. While the rest of the market was doing better. So those were not comparatively great years. But now this year, and I don't have everybody's, all their money in silver and gold, but some of the people didn't like the market, and all of a sudden we've had this unbelievable year, or unbelievable last 6 months for people. And now I'm sitting there going, I got the GDX, which is the gold miners, at 91. It started the year at, what, 35 or 30, I don't, you know, whatever. And I don't see this going next year. What's my next year's trick going
to
be?
Which, I got to tell you, I was listening to them this morning they were talking about it on CNBC, and they were just talking about how gold is going to continue to be a good trade, because you've got these countries around the world that are moving away from dollar-denominated assets and moving into gold because they're not sure what's happening in terms of what we're doing economically, what the future's going to look like, what inflation's going to look like. And so that trade of central bank buying and country buying gold is alive and well. So they continue to suspect that gold's going to be a very good trade even into the new year. This is after 2 years of, you know, 50% plus gains.
Yeah. Every week I go... My brother, Dan, is this the week we start selling some calls against this stuff? And he goes,
yeah.
You know, it's some combination of today's world, Kenny, where it's a momentum trade. It keeps going regardless of what the value or whatever it is. It just keeps going.
Right.
I mean, you and I, when we started the business, you know, if IBM was trading 200 and you liked it at 200, when it got to 220, you didn't like it as much. So, you know, but now it seems like when it gets to 220, it goes further. It's kind of a different... This momentum thing is not what you and I grew up on, I don't think.
Not at all.
And but I just is there as part of this, without getting into the, you know, the people who love it and people who don't, is part of the re-energy. I haven't seen copper making the same move. Now I have a lot of people now that are sending me stuff and everything saying, you know, copper is next year's metal. I don't know about that, but that's question two. But question one is. Is a little bit of the gloss off this crypto is part of those guys, since we've seen this Bitcoin, you know, it was up high at 126 down to 87.
Yeah.
Are some people saying, I don't know if I trust this, I'm going back to gold? Is that happening at all?
I haven't heard that yet, but that, you know, that wouldn't necessarily surprise me if we started to see kind of more and more people move out of this crypto trade and back into something like gold or silver, which is, you know, you can hold it, you can touch it, you can feel it, you can buy it and put it in your safety deposit box or wherever. You can't really do that with crypto. So, you know, could that be could you be on something? You could be. I think people that are really nervous and are not sure where the future is going would move into the gold trade, because listen, gold is gold, right? And you know what it is. You know what you can do with it. Crypto is still kind of out there as a futuristic type of instrument. While I do believe that there is a future for it, it is certainly under lots of pressure. Bitcoin's trading at 87,000. Ethereum's at below 3,000 at 2,900. You know, these are well off their highs. Like you said, it was 126,000 Bitcoin, 3 months ago?
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem to, you know, it's been churning here now in this $80,000 range for a good, I don't know, 3 or 4 weeks after the breakdown. And it hasn't really done much of anything either way, right? So I think it's temporary, but I do think there may be some reality in the fact that people who want to be in alternative spaces and were once considering Bitcoin are now also moving into gold.
Kenny, sort of an end of the year question. I mean, when you look at our dollar, and I don't want to go into some, you know, long dissertation, which I tend to do too often on it, because, you know, this is what I went to school and learned for whatever reason. I just landed there into a spot where I found it interesting and kind of stayed in currencies and things. And if I were to say to you or anybody in New York or anybody say, God, the dollar is not worth anywhere near what it used to be, somebody's going to say, what do you mean? The pound is here and the yen is here. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about the dollar versus a car, you know, a dollar versus a house, a dollar versus anything else. And I wonder if some of the, and I can't put my finger on this, if some of the destabilization you see in some of these countries, I read, God, Kenny, 30 years ago, that the single biggest source of wealth growth in Russia were individual people holding $100 bills of the U.S. They didn't trust the Russian currency. They didn't trust anything. Well, right. In the last 20 or 30 years, we have essentially eviscerated those people because the dollar is worth half of what it was back then.
Right.
In terms of any other product. Now, it's worth the same in terms of the pound or whatever, but they've done the same thing. And I wonder if we see, I would say the administration's push, not necessarily the Fed, because I don't know what Powell's doing anymore. The idea of starting to pour money back into the system here, and we aren't going to give you the inflation numbers anymore, which appears to me. I mean, the last thing, what was a joke last month? It was a blank page, right? I wonder if that's part of the gold thing, too, because I don't trust, I'd like to have as many dollars in my pocket as I can, and certainly for my clients, but I don't know that the dollar itself is, it's in harm's way. And when that happens, there's people who absolutely make money on that. Football teams, baseball teams, people that own the Doral, not mentioning any names, people that do that stuff and now can pay off debt with depreciated money.
Right.
When you look at I think you would be with me on this if we went up to the blackboard showing our age. Why would somebody pay $8 billion for a football team that makes $200 million a year? You and I would say what? Yet if their view of 10 years from now, if we inflate the bleep out of the place, all of a sudden the tickets are going to be $500.
Yeah.
And if I can get my property taxes frozen like they're trying in Illinois, and the state is smart enough to tell the bears no way. I mean, if I can get all that kind of stuff frozen, all of a sudden 10 years from now, the world looks a lot different for them than it does for us, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it looks a lot different.
And that's kind of what I think we're sort of fighting here. And we have been fighting it for a long time because maybe we had a couple presidents that didn't know what was going on. Not so sure that was so good either. Because to me, it's a 20 or 25-year phenomenon. But now we got a guy who absolutely knows what's going on and is taking advantage of it. So I don't know if it's worse or better, but it's clear, right? I mean, he wants to own everything he can out of the Oval Office. Where the other guys, you couldn't at least accuse him of that. But the people around him made a lot of money. I don't know which is worse, to be a crook or to not know what's going on? I don't even know.
To be a crook, I think.
Which would you rather be, oblivious or part of the game? I honestly don't know the answer to that. Which would you rather have? All the people around somebody still, and he doesn't even know what's happening, or the next guy knows it's happening, and he's all in. Neither one is all that good, is it?
No, neither one is very. No, neither one is good.
So how many are people traveling to Florida? Or you just got getting your gang down there.
Well, my youngest daughter came down on Sunday. And so my kids are here, but my in-laws, like my one sister-in-law, which I have five of them, but one of them is coming down on Christmas Day morning, probably the weekend, 4 or 5 days with us. And that's it. My parents are up in Ponte Vedra with my brother, so I'm not going to see them because that's 4 hours away from where I am. So it'll be a quiet Christmas Eve, but that's okay. Listen, it is what it is.
Your wife is one of six girls? Wow. Good for you.
My wife is one of six, one boy and five sisters.
Wow.
Yeah. And so...
Did you date all the sisters first or no?
No. No, I did not.
I know somebody who dated a girl who was an identical twin, decided that she was way too much. Then he started going out with her sister and he married the sister.
Yeah,
you're identical.
I did not do that. I only dated my wife.
That's good. Well, that would be some hard feelings, maybe, or maybe not. Yeah. Maybe. Well, I'm glad he went with her and didn't stick with me. You never know how this plays out. Isn't that the beauty of human events?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Merry Christmas, buddy, and
all right, and you as well. I'll talk. Listen, you want? I'm not here next week, so next week I'm out. If you're on. So I'll be in the new year.
Okay, the new year, and we'll usher that in, and we're gonna predict things right. You got to give me if I decide to pile out of gold and silver. You got to tell me where to go. What's your scoop on the XLE, the oil? It's
the oil. I like energy and I like oil, so I'm long the XLE, and I'm long individual names ExxonMobil and ExxonMobil, but I'm long the XLE as well, and I continue to like it and I continue to buy it. But that's me.
I'll tell you what, since it's split. It's getting a lot. It's a lot easier to do the option rolls and stuff.
Yeah, that one split in one of the other ones split. I'm trying to remember what was the other one.
How did they decide?
Financials, I think.
How did they decide which one's a split?
Because I don't know how they decide to do that. I tried to look it up. It didn't give me an explanation. It just showed that it split. It was financials, I believe, and energy, right?
Isn't that what split? These are the little spiders that up to the big spider. There's 9 of them. Yeah. It might be 10 of them now. But we have a lot of people in the XLV, Kenny, which is the healthcare piece.
Yeah.
Now, that thing's 155.
Yeah.
It didn't split. Now, the XLE was 88, and it did split. So
So I don't know how they come. I don't know how they do that. I don't know why they choose to do that.
I mean, it would be nice if the XLV split.
Maybe the other ones are going to split. I don't know. You don't know. Maybe they haven't. They're not done yet.
I mean, they just didn't take the highest price ones. That wasn't the dynamic.
It was not. Because even consumer discretionary is 122, tech's 145, industrial's 157. So they didn't split those.
No. They split two of them. What was the other one? The XLF? They didn't split.
It was XLF. XLF and XLE. I think those are the two that split.
All right, buddy. You have a good one, and I'm going to go back and check out those because my family, my brother cooks every Sunday, and now they're lobbing at me, hey, why don't we do some fish? I said, if we can do some fish, I got to go look into Kenny's vault.
They're all there.
Because, I mean, cooking fish is tough.
Yeah, but I know, but I've been doing it for so long. It's easy
not,
for me. But
it's not tough for you.
You screw it up for sure.
It's not tough for you. It's tough. I'm gonna have to learn. I have to practice on myself here.
Goodbye.
All right, buddy. Take care. SP Futures down 3. NASDAQ Futures down 11. Do we have a professor?
Yes, we do.
What's up, man? How are you?
What's up? How you doing?
All right. If you've been listening, comment on anything. We're trying to find out the. We're spending some time this week on Hal. We don't have to talk about it if you don't want to, and. What exactly people buy when they pay off when they contribute to political campaigns? How's that instead of buy off politicians? What do they buy? How much? What do you get when you pay? What happens if something becomes so obvious that the person who's been paying you the whole time needs to change or needs to go to jail or something? Can you turn the bus around? Can you say, well, I know you've financed me for 30 years, but you've gone too far, and we got to throw you in jail? I guess. It sounds like I'm just spattering BS basically, but I'm not, because we've talked on the show, mostly Carl's driving it, of how much the Medicare piece of the pie is, not Medicare, medical piece of the pie for everybody, is skewing, essentially the GDP in this country, and it's funny because we talked. We didn't know the CPI was going to be a blank page, pretty much a blank page. And, back and forth, you got, the president, damn near embarrassing himself, screaming and yelling about prices are all down. And I heard a report yesterday, must have been on Saturday, News Radio 78, and I'll give him credit, where they interviewed a whole bunch of people. They did a survey, and it's funny, they zeroed in on not the price of eggs and gas like all the politicians are blubbering about. They basically said they can't deal with the price of housing and can't deal with the price of hospitalization or medicine, which is exactly where everybody on this show agrees that that's the hole in the CPI. Those are the two holes in the CPI on purpose, and that's where people are being gouged, and one of these days people are going to figure it out. It appears they're starting to figure it out. Now, what that means, I don't know. Maybe you can comment on what does it mean.
Well, I mean, I think it's been like that, at least 20 years and going, right?
Yeah, but you're a professor. My point is, the question I'm having with everybody this week after seeing what happened in Chicago, where is the bottom? Where does somebody, even somebody who's gotten a check for Pfizer his whole life, saying, hey, guys, you went too far. You're breaking the country. I mean, where is that spot ever?
Well, actually, I think the healthcare component is actually intentional. I mean, the solution that's being tossed around now is we're going to continue these subsidies that go directly to these insurance companies. And if you really think about what insurance is, there's X number of people who need to be insured. You can think of that as a vertical supply curve. And anytime you subsidize a product with something that's perfectly inelastic, usually what happens is the entire subsidy, like for example, when we subsidized electric vehicles, I guarantee you, almost 100%, almost all of that money, all that subsidy, went to Elon Musk.
Oh, because $1 trillion? Yeah.
Yeah. Because at the time, remember, we were supplies constrained. So if you believe in an upward sloping supply curve, at the moment the supply chain becomes constrained, they can only make X number of cars a month. At that moment, the upward sloping supply curve, if you believe the upward sloping supply curve in the short run, it kinks and it goes vertical. So anytime you subsidize a product, all that subsidy is going to go to the seller of the car, and all they do is they lift the price of the car by the amount of the subsidy. That's exactly what happened with Elon Musk when we had the supply constraints during and after COVID.
Do you mind if I translate your brilliant economic thing for the listeners? What Al's talking about when he talks about inelastic in the short term, and by the way, he just gave an amazingly good class. If nobody picked it up, but what he's saying is, sorry to do this to you, Al, is if all of a sudden everybody used 20% more gasoline, all right, the price of gasoline is going to go to the roof because on a weekly basis you can't get any more gas in the system, the supply. So every supply curve, if you change the date on it, the curve changes. But if you were to say we're going to use 20% more gas, you swing it out 5 years, the price might be the same as it is today, or only up a little bit, right, Al? Because in five years, the supply gets a chance to adjust. And if the price now goes up half an hour a gallon, there could be all kinds of wells in all kinds of countries, and all of a sudden are profitable. And, oh, by the way, we open up a couple refineries that have been shuttered. The supply industry will adjust to a certain extent. It might not go back to the same price, but on day one, it's like if you walk into your, if 1,000 people walk into your local bar and all of a sudden they're out of beer, they're just out of beer, right? But they can get some tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
So I'm sorry if I'm just saying that you are absolutely correct, but maybe I just tried to explain it. Maybe I made it worse. I don't know, but
the same thing's going on with the health insurance, right? The insurance companies know they got to supply X number of health insurance policies. And when you just give the insurance companies a subsidy, that's going to turn into a situation where the subsidy is going to go to just a higher price. It's just going to lift the price because there's X number of people who need to be insured at this moment in time. So that's the solution that these politicians look like they're going to settle on. They're going to continue the subsidy to the insurance company. Now, I want the whole system torn down. I'm not going to get it. What is a better alternative than just giving this subsidy to a health insurance company? Well, maybe just give it to people, split the subsidy up amongst Americans to go out and buy their own insurance. And the reason why I think that's a better solution is because if you're given the money to go buy your own health insurance, what are you going to do? You're going to shop, and you're going to shop around. You're going to look for the best health insurance for you. And if that company treats you poorly, then you fire them and you go to the next insurance company. Now these insurance companies have to compete for business.
Okay, but now you're...
I prefer that.
All right, be careful with that, because in the classroom, you're going to get no debate from me. But one of the biggest issues with Obamacare, one of them, is they didn't deal with any kind of cost. But does any listeners remember...
Well, they didn't do anything with supply. I mean, they're going to increase the supply of medical care in the rural communities.
I'm just wandering down a road here. Nobody probably... Does anybody remember, because this is now what, 20 years ago? Does anybody remember the insurance exchange concept? You should.
Well, yeah, they were trying to create... I think the goal of the system was to create an insurance exchange.
Right.
Where these insurance companies would compete. But that didn't happen.
Well, and why didn't it happen? Because...
Because the big companies bought out the little companies.
Unbeknownst to... Yeah. I was asked Kenny, would you rather be oblivious or you rather be crooked? Either unbeknownst to, if I'm trying to make the biggest long sermon here, but your insurance companies usually were state by state because they would have their own network. Now whether they should have been or shouldn't have been, some states.
Well, if you really look at it, it's probably more of a cartel than anything else.
Okay, but some states had 15, 17 different insurance companies. Blue Cross was Blue Cross of Illinois, Blue Cross of Iowa. Then somebody found a way to buy a whole bunch of Blue Crosses. So they became across state lines, they became a cartel. But in the state of Nevada...
Well, within a state, I think the insurance company was run in some states as a cartel.
I'm talking 25 years ago when people thought about this and the mistake they made, in my opinion. Well, there were something like 15, 30, 40 combinations of insurance companies before the law went into effect. So the idea of having an insurance exchange when you got no market makers anymore, what's the point? And I think at one point, you know, New York only had two or three insurance companies, where Nevada had like 17. So you could have an exchange in New York. What does that do you with three people standing there?
Yeah.
I'm talking about an old exchange.
Well, here's another issue. I read an article, I think it was from like an economist like Art Laffer, somebody in that supply side.
Well, whatever. Thank you. Not sure whatever school he's from, but...
Yeah. I think... I remember reading this article, and in Tennessee, health insurance was, I think, six times cheaper than it was in New Jersey, because in New Jersey, they had to cover everything. Everything was an insurable loss. They had to cover everything from... If this health insurance was covering, like, automotive, it would have had to cover... like oil changes and tire rotations. It had to cover everything. And so his thought was, whoever wrote this article, it's been a long time since I read it, his thought was, well, why not just let the company in Jersey choose between buying insurance in Jersey versus buying it in Tennessee?
Oh, you can't do that. Can't do that.
I know, because each of these states has a cartel. Right, they have a cartel.
It goes deeper than a little deeper than that, in that the Blue Cross of Illinois does not have their what do they call it? Their oh god, I'm going brain dead. What do they call it when you got all the hospitals lined up for your price? They don't have a network in Iowa.
Well, I think they could.
Well,
they
don't. But I'm saying, but they don't. So if they were to offer you, and this is, and we used to have Bob Cerrone.
Think about this, Tom. If in New Jersey, the insurance commissions tell insurance companies that are operating within the state, they have to cover everything.
Okay, what I'm trying to say
is... How many insurance companies can survive that?
Okay,
maybe one or two?
Against
why you have one or two companies.
Against all Supreme Court decisions and against all laws, if you have an appendectomy and run over to Northwestern, your price is going to be probably three times as much if, let's say, PTI wanted to pay for it, is if Blue Cross paid for it, which is against all laws or whatever. But now, if all of a sudden somebody from Iowa, I'm going back a ways, bought insurance from Blue Cross of Illinois and had his appendectomy in Des Moines, Blue Cross of Illinois does not have that deal with Des Moines General Hospital.
Yeah.
So they don't have their network. So that's why they wouldn't or couldn't compete out of state, because they actually wouldn't. They couldn't compete out of state because they didn't have their network. They didn't have their deals set up. This is, you know, there's the theoretical part of this, and then there's the practical part, which gets you even more sick.
The issue with this can't use health insurance across state line thing goes back to the FDR administration, where they, I forget the name of the law. It starts, I think it was, starts with an M. It was implemented during FDR's administration. And it defines insurance as not being commerce. So that allows states to regulate it and violate the Interstate Commerce Clause. And when I read this article, I was like, let's just go a little further. Let's open up insurance to any country in the world. You could buy insurance from Mexico. You could buy insurance from China. You could buy insurance from Canada. Wherever you want to buy your insurance, you can buy it. I mean, I can buy glasses from China that cost $10 a pair, and they're just as good as a pair of glasses I spent $100 on in America. Why can't I just do that with health insurance? So let's just open it up. Let's extend the argument and just make insurance. You can purchase insurance from anybody in the world.
Yeah, I just told you why. Because the guy in China is not getting the same price in Northwestern Hospital as the guy in Illinois. That's the problem.
Yeah, but see, the hospital itself is protected by laws. Like a con law in North Carolina. I just read an article last week where this guy sued the state, or sued the regulators of the state, the healthcare regulators of the state.
Good luck with that.
He wanted to offer a procedure, and apparently these procedures are all done by a central single clinic in the state of North Carolina, and the whole thing came impinged on this idea of a con law, right? Where a con law is where if you have an established business and somebody sees that you have above normal economic profits, they want to open up a similar business across the street or maybe in a different county nearby, and that that operating firm, the one that's operating with that monopoly, issues a competitor's veto through a con law, and they claim that that service is not needed because they perform it and it's duplicative. And so this competitor's veto is upheld, and that entrepreneur can't open his clinic across the street or in a nearby county. That is anti-competitive.
Well, sure it is.
It, and these exist in like 34 states. And this is the whole problem with healthcare.
Well, it's not the whole problem. It's one of the problems.
It's not commerce. It's not judged as commerce. So they can regulate it within the state and create these monopolies within the states in terms of health insurance and health providers. And then they, can you imagine McDonald's being allowed to use a con law to keep Burger King from opening up across the street? It's all corrupt, in my opinion.
Well, sure it is. We started yesterday with Mr. Flanagan, and by the way, you're second. Oh, obviously we got it a little bit with Carl. Where do you start? And yesterday we were talking more. We weren't on the same subject you are, but obviously that's a very big subject. The idea that, you know, the hospitals have different prices for different people, that's a problem because I've told the story a couple times. I'll review it.
But one of the dentists in the state of North Carolina, they'll ask you if you have health insurance. Why? Because you have to have health insurance. You have to buy those X-rays every 6 months because those X-ray machines are profit centers, right?
Well, they ask if you have health insurance because most people do. I mean, I don't for dental.
Well, they ask for that dental insurance because they want to know that they can bill that third-party payer.
Well, sure.
Because if you don't have that dental insurance, you're not going to be able to afford their prices.
Well,
but they have to have two sets of prices. With dental insurance.
They might have two sets of prices.
Yeah.
But
and apparently, that's okay in healthcare. But heaven forbid Amazon use dynamic pricing.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, you and I have been on before, and I said, okay, what would happen if you and I walked in because we just went and played golf and we're going to cook some burgers on the grill, and we walked into the butcher and we said, how much is the burger? And the guy said, how much you got?
Yeah.
You're like, what does that have to do with anything? Well, if you got dough, it's $8 a pound. If you don't, it's $2 a pound.
Well, you know, on the internet, I've thought this for a long time. Is when I go out and I shop for like plane tickets, the plane tickets I'm getting, the prices I'm getting are probably $100 less per flight than somebody that goes on the internet and just looks for a flight, clicks it once, and purchases.
Yeah, but your family hates you for flying at 2 a.m.
My laptop, I'm going to get lower prices because I'm a 1,000-click shopper. I'm not a one-click shopper.
If your kid's ever been on
a... How many times you click to buy something indicates to the company what your maximum willingness to pay is. And that's what companies are after. They want to know what your willingness to pay is.
Yeah, but you're still willing to go on a prop job instead of a jet.
Well, you have to fly one of those if you want to go to Lewiston, Idaho from Orlando.
Remember the scene in... the movie's 100 years ago. Remember the scene in Mad, Mad World? Where they go and they get the guy with the airplane, and he got this old crop duster, and he's and they're buzzing along, and the guy looks down, and he goes, "The cars are going faster than we are."
Well, there's an episode of Wings where they had to fly across the country because this old man, Brian, kind of left out a disclaimer on the lottery, and anywhere it was supposed to say anywhere Sandpiper flies, well, he left it out because he thought it was too cumbersome on the flyer. So Joe had to promise this old guy who asked these really dumb questions to fly him to his brother's, who was supposed to be living in New Mexico but ended up living in Wyoming. And it's pretty funny, but they're flying in a little plane and they have to stop like every 800 miles to refuel. The whole episode was about this little plane.
You gotta be careful.
Flying from Boise to Lewiston on a connecting flight to get to Lewiston, Idaho, that is the scariest thing I've ever done. I mean, that plane was free-falling 20 yards every, like, I don't know, mile. It was crazy.
Well, some of those planes, I flew out to buy a truck in Vernal, Utah. You ever been there?
Oh, I've been to Vernal, yep.
What is Vernal famous for in their own mind?
I don't know.
They call it the dinosaur capital of the U.S.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, that makes sense.
Why? Why would it make sense? I mean, where they found some skeleton out there?
There's all kinds of dinosaurs, and there's actually a famous alien. What's it called? A ranch.
An alien
ranch. Skinwalker Ranch. So really? In Utah, you have these famous Skinwalker Ranch, and you have these dinosaur finds. If you're driving in that area and you're looking at the mountains, you'll see like an 8 foot wide band of coal just going along the mountain range. It's called Carbon County.
Really?
And you can look at the mountain and you can just see this 8 foot thick layer of coal just right there, just looking right at you. And then there's all kinds of oil rigs along the highway there too.
Really? Well, I mean, I flew out there because I bought a remember it's a while ago. Remember the Dodge Ram Charger, the big old Ute.
Yeah.
I bought one of those things out there. It was, you know, I loved it. But then some guy wanted to buy it for me. I sold it to him. But I drove the thing back. But it used to be when you landed in Denver, you know, you flew to Denver, and then there's all these little towns out there. And so at the end of the runway, or the end of the thing, you'd go over and you'd walk outside, and there has to be like 20.
Was this when it was down at Stapleton, or was
No, this is a new one. There's got to be 20 of these.
Oh, dude, that airport is in the middle of freaking... I think it's closer to Nebraska than Denver.
Oh, yeah, it's a solid, what's it, 40, 50 miles from Denver or something?
I don't know what they were thinking. I think they were thinking they were going to have some serious growth out there or something. I don't know.
But it's you're out there. Matter of fact, the hotels crazy. Are still where Stapleton was, right? They never moved out there. But you get out the scene, all of a sudden you see all these planes, and there were all these two-engine, really nice prop jobs that held like 30 people maybe, 25. And one's going to Vernal, one's going to Alfspin, one's going to Vail, one's going to Steamboat. I mean, because there's all these little towns out there. But you hop on one of those things. I tell you what, I mean, I know people love the jets and stuff, but I don't go anywhere, but... I'd be very happy with one of those things. They go, what, like 350, 375? They buzz up, buzz down, and they're stable as hell. Those are nice.
Well, my grandpa Holmgren, he was my adopted grandpa. He adopted my mom when she was like 2 years old. She was abandoned twice before the age of two.
God.
But they ended up adopting her and my Aunt Joanne. And he was a pretty wealthy guy in Idaho. He owned a plumbing store. And when he sold his plumbing store, he moved to St. George, but the entire time he ran that plumbing business, and then retiring in Utah, he owned a plane. And my dad had us living in suburban ghost town, Davytown, places like that. Davytown, Nevada is a ghost town. And we lived in the suburban area of Davytown.
How do you live in a suburb of a ghost town? How does a ghost town get a suburb?
We didn't even have sewer at the time. I was probably like maybe pre-K age, and my dad had to dig a hole in the ground and then fill it up with gravel for our sewer line. It was a farm
I'm still working on the concept of a suburb to a ghost town.
Yeah, and the nearest town was called McDermott, and McDermott was like a four-room classroom school.
Did you guys have a water hookup, or did you have a well?
Well, we used the irrigation water line, right? And then we used the electrical.
Was the irrigation water potable?
It was, I'm telling you, it was in the middle of nowhere. McDermott was probably 20 miles from our house. And McDermott was an intersection. It had a gas station and a school. That was it.
We lived
20 miles from that. And we explored Davytown. They had like a saloon there, a kind of like broken down saloon, and then they had I think it was built on top of a gold mine, and we walked around in Davytown. It's like three or four buildings, but the school out there was, I think, basically a reservation school. I didn't go to it. My brother Ryan and Todd went to it, and it had grades 1 through 8 in it, and the teacher was so bad that kids would bring whiskey to the school, and when my mom found out about it, she said, "I am your teacher's assistant." God. She just injected herself into that school.
Well, there's a town. I'm brain dead here, but we actually, one of my guys used to work for us, and a good buddy. We go to Vegas. He drags us out to this town. It's out in the middle of nowhere.
I can imagine.
It's the town where who's a famous movie star sat in the bar stool for 20 some hours when his girlfriend didn't get there while they were looking for the wreckage of a plane, and he drank till he found the wreckage or something. It was some long story, and. But it's south, it's on the way to south, you know, get out of there on the way to L.A. and Vegas, and you pull off. It's probably 50 miles. Well, you pull into the town, and there's all these people with, you know, campers and Winnebagos, and I think if you just pull off, you're you don't get counted. But as soon as you poke the Winnebago into the water line, I think they count you.
As a
resident or something, as long as you poke into the water line, it's...
Well, it's probably a snowbird type of town, I would think.
No, there's... I'll find it here on the map. Yeah. But hey, we were talking the... We zeroed in from the downside. I mean, obviously the insurance companies are an issue.
Yeah.
We zeroed in from the downside regarding the drug prices. Now, where would you start there is the question. I mean, is it... The simple stupid thing, which might work a little bit, but I don't know that it would be something that we'd want to do, would be, okay, patents are now, you know, 12 years and not 17, or 10 years and not 17. I don't know. I mean, that would be the simplest, dumbest thing to do. I don't know if that's much of a cure.
I don't think it'd do much.
No, I'm saying, well, it would for, what, Viagra went and got another 2 years. They got 19, right? So I guess, you know, if it was 12, it might have made a difference. But, you know, I'm searching for... The question is, how do you get somebody, like what just happened here in Illinois, in Chicago, where the alderman got so desperate with his crazy mayor. The name of the town I'm talking about is Good Springs, Nevada. And that's where whatever the guy was at. And there's a bar there that's very famous, and anyway, so that's where we went down there and had a drink at this bar. But what would it? How do you get from the chemotherapy costing $40,000 here and costing $5,000 in India, and which I don't care so much about the other country, but it obviously costs $500 to make. So if it's $500 to make or $200, how do you stop somebody here from charging $50,000? How do you stop somebody from charging $10 a pill for Eliquis when it probably costs them 30 cents.
Well, you get rid of all the regulations and licensing and whatnot.
Okay, well,
you get rid of all those restrictions.
Right now, they get a patent. All right, so my question is that where you would start? And maybe is where I would start. But I don't know what because all the stuff about the insurance companies, about the payers, about Obamacare, about blah, 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 really comes down to somebody's paying $10 for something that should cost $1. And no matter what you do, no matter what, you know, little tin cup you put it under in the street, somebody's paying too much dough. And unless you stop that, I don't know where no matter what you do and who's paying.
It's worse. The whole pharmaceutical thing is worse than just a simple single price monopoly model, right? Because when you have a patent on a drug, you can do a one price monopoly model. And then you layer into that the third-party payer. And the third-party payer, the health insurance company, they have to pay for the prescription that is issued by a doctor.
Right.
So, and the insurance companies know this, right? Or the pharmaceutical companies know this. So, me personally, I might be willing to pay at most, I don't know, $100 for drug XYZ. I'm prescribed it, and if I had to pay for it myself, I'd pay up to $100 for it. However, and the monopoly comes in, the company restricts the price or restricts the sale of this drug by charging a monopoly price. And maybe that monopoly price is $150, right? So that's the classic single price monopoly model. They price it $150. I'm willing to pay at most $100 for it. Well, I guess we have to introduce two different people here. I'm willing to pay $100 for it at the competitive market equilibrium price. And then Monopoly comes in, they put a price at $150. So somebody else is willing to pay $150 for that drug. I'm only willing to pay $100 for it. So I'm not going to buy the drug without insurance, right?
Right.
Without insurance, I'm not going to buy the drug. Because it's more than I'm willing to pay, because they're charging $150. Now, here comes the part with the third-party payer. The pharmaceutical company knows that the
the insurance company has to cover this drug. So what they do is they, maybe the $150 is the most the insurance company's willing to pay for it, right? And the copay is 20%, right? So what the 20% does is it ends up being a multiplier. You multiply the 150 by 5, and you get the price that the pharmaceutical drug is going to charge the insurance company. So that it's all messed up.
The biggest lobby, if you come out with a drug that's amazingly expensive, is to lobby the insurance companies to cover it, because you know people can't afford it.
The key insight that I gained from about a year of teaching health economics is that co-insurance percentage. If your co-insurance percentage is 20%.
Well, let's go to break. When we come back, I'll tell you a quick story about one of our first clients and what he did before any of this was just screwed up, and how sort of easy it used to be. SP Futures down 4 and NASDAQ Futures down 24. I'll be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jacks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jacks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjacks.net. That's matt@stocksandjacks.net.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. He's Ricky on the board. I'm trying to find out the story of this saloon in Good Springs, which I probably shouldn't be doing. But the S&P futures are down 375. NASDAQ futures down 20. The Dow is, I'll get the Dow here because I've got the Bitcoin page up. The Dow is down 4. Nothing really is moving much. In the Dow, I've got Johnson & Johnson's down $1.30. McDonald's down $1.25. It's probably the biggest movers. Even in the crazy 7, Microsoft's up 58 cents. They had Google down 35 cents. Nothing crazy going on there either. And obviously, this is a holiday week. Over in Europe, matter of fact, we have half a day tomorrow, as I'll recall. We have a full day Friday. The DAX up 27.1%. FTSE up 4, call that flat. CAC around down 18.2%, so there's virtually nothing going on in Europe. Nikkei up 10, that's flat. Hang Seng down 27.1%. Shanghai up 2, those are flat. So it looks like a snoozer, at least so far. 10-year bond unchanged, 4.17. Not much going on there. Oil, which is coming up just a little bit, up 11 cents, 58.12, still under 60, but it's above the 55 it was a few days ago. Oil's been just getting decimated. Brent up 11 cents, 62.18. Gold, here's where all the action is. Gold's up another 50 bucks, 45.19. Silver up $1.74. It's crossed $70 here, 250. Today we're doing fine in the gold. We had some calls here in the silver, so we're being in a chase mode here a little bit today. Foreign exchange, 117.8 on the euro. That's as high as that's been for a while. British pound over 135. The dollar's been going down. The yen is 156.21. Now careful, that's 156 yen to the dollar. So the yen is getting a little stronger. That means it's getting stronger as there's less yen to the dollar. So that means it's stronger. It's different than the other ones. Crypto. Bitcoin down 364.87, 799. DF4's Trevi Weather Sports.
Good morning, Chief. It's currently 735 here in Chicago. We're looking at 38 degrees right now with a high of 49. Mostly cloudy today, and tonight will remain pretty similar with a low of 34 degrees. Phoenix, Arizona, 53 degrees right now with a high of 80. Sunny to partly cloudy and warm today. Tonight will be partly cloudy as well with a low of 53 degrees. Traffic in Chicago real quick. 10 minutes, Simon Kennedy from Monroe's. Edens from Lake Cook, 23 minutes. Eisenhower from Wall, 15 minutes. Dan Ryan from 95th, 13 minutes. And lastly, Stevenson from 294, 17 minutes. Sports real quick, the Flyers play at Blackhawks today at 8 p.m. so watch out for that during traffic as well. NFL Christmas Day games this Thursday, we have Cowboys at Commanders, 12 p.m. Lions at Vikings at 3:30 p.m. and Broncos at Chiefs, 7:15 p.m. Lastly, tonight we got Bulls at Hawks at 6:30 p.m. Back over to you guys.
We have just a quick story, and one of our PTI opened in 1991, I believe. By the way, the bar in Good Springs is the Pioneer Saloon, and it was the Carol Lombard plane crash that I was talking about. I'll talk about
it. Oh, really?
Yeah. And also in 1915, it was the setting of a deadly game of cards. Somebody got shot. So Get those two things going for it. This gentleman owned a some sort of a factory in Columbus, Indiana. I don't know what the hell he made, but and this is before all this. When people insurance back in those days, sometimes people paid themselves, then just got rebate from insurance. You know, the whole thing about, you know, pieces of paper flying back and forth between insurance companies and doctors really didn't exist in those days. Not certainly not to the extent as it did here. In all hospitals, it probably did. But yeah. Anyway, what he did at his place, he said, well, here's what we're going to do. He gave everybody like $500 for like a deductible. All right, and anything over that, they zeroed in on, I'm going to say Lloyd's of London for an overall plan, and just in case anything got totally out of hand. What's the worst thing that can happen to you, kind of no matter what? And what costs the most? You know, you probably know this. If you're insuring somebody for hospitalization and care.
What was the question?
Well, like, what would be the most expensive thing that could possibly happen to you? It would be a bad thing to happen to the person as well.
A hospital?
Yeah, so it's not cancer. It's not a heart attack. It's if somebody has a kid who needs help for, like, the next 40 years or something
like
that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
definitely.
Anyway, he got an insurance policy from Lloyd's for this overall thing where if somebody did have, you know, fought cancer for 5 years or something else, that covered probably was $10,000 deductible on a person or 20 or whatever it was. But the other person just went to the hospital, went to the doctor, went to the hospital, and they just paid for it.
Yeah.
He said they saved so much money over a 4 or 5 year span that was like the biggest profit margin in his place. And as little as 5-6 years ago, Bob Cerrone said that if anybody, because they had a, I think Bob retired, but they had one of those firms where they did your payroll and they got the big pool together for insurance, and he told me that if you have 50 or 100 people working for you, you should never have a pharmacy plan. You should just pay for it. Do it yourself. Make your own pharmacy plan because it was cheaper. But now all of a sudden, like you brought up very intelligently, and Carl, if the person from this guy CW's place went to the hospital for an appendectomy, now he's going to pay 2 or 3 times more than the insurance company is. Which is, again, against 2 Supreme Court decisions and against any kind of law you can find. But still, they do it. The two-tier pricing you're talking about. So yeah. you can't insure yourself now because of that, which is somehow we got to stop that, hell. But how the hell are we going to do it? I mean, nobody seems to want to, even though they got all the laws, the Supreme Court decisions behind it, insurance company just, and the hospital just basically stick it in your face. You can't be without insurance now because your cost could be twice as much, 3 times as much.
Yeah. It's kind of like what they did with the banking system, right? I mean, before the Fed, people routinely saved money in a tin can, a coffee can, right? And I think one of the purposes of the Federal Reserve was to force people to no longer bank with their tin can or their jar that's in the cupboard.
Well, it made it hard if you had a robbery or a fire.
The bank by creating inflation.
Well, if you had a robbery or a fire, it made it kind of tough.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of Americans were really skeptical of banks in the 1800s, and so they wouldn't save at a bank, and so it just pushed all that money. The inflation the Fed creates pushes a lot of that money into the banking system, right? You don't want to hold it.
Well, hell, you were just what if? Oh, back when I showed my age, remember the TV show, Bonanza, right?
Yeah.
Well, there was the Virginia City Bank.
Yeah.
Okay. Now. People didn't.
Did that play take place in Nevada?
Yeah, it was in.
Was that the state that the fictional Bonanza was in?
Oh yeah, they were right on the Comstock Lode.
Okay, yeah.
They
it's been a while since I watched that. I was probably.
I think the Virginia City Bank would put out script that was only good for the Virginia City Bank, right? And then whenever Haas or somebody went to San Francisco, they would actually get $50 gold pieces to go to San Francisco because the money was good in San Francisco, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think you could bring the Virginia City script.
No, you couldn't. No.
Uh-huh. Out of the state, it was in. Tell us the name of it. It's right near Lake Tahoe. I'll think of the name. But they were in Virginia City, and what was it, the town that was that they used to go to once in a while? That's where right on top of the silver mine. Anyway, because it was that's where all the money came from. There was the Comstock Lode. in that area. Anyway, but didn't banks used to have kind of their own script, right?
Oh, yeah. There was a movie with called Homesman with Tommy Lee Jones, I think it is. And he is going to take these women that went crazy on the Kansas prairie. He's going to take them to Iowa so they can be reunited with their family out east. And he's going with Hillary Swank. Hillary Swank is this tough, unattractive woman who never married.
Hillary Swank was pretty hot.
I know, but she didn't look hot in this movie.
Okay.
Everybody considered her not pretty in the movie, and she never married anybody. And she's tough as a, you know, and she runs her own ranch. And so she's going with this guy because he's kind of like a gunslinger and a drunk and a gambler. But the town hires him.
How can you be kind of like a drunk, a gambler, and a gunslinger? You already are.
Well, it's been a while since I watched the movie, so I'm trying to remember it. But I think it was Tommy Lee Jones. And so these two take these women, these crazy women, from their homes where they just went crazy because there was so much isolation out there on the prairie. They take him to Iowa, and he's been paid in banknotes from that local town's bank. And he tries to use it in a card game after he delivers these women to the local church. And, I mean, it's really good. It shows you how rough life was for women before capitalism liberated them with all kinds of convenient things like bread makers and toasters, oh, yeah, and ovens and fridges.
A washing machine.
Yeah. Their life was rough on the prairie.
Life was rough in the city.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't much better.
It was rough out there in the prairie because your nearest neighbor was probably 5 miles away, and you know, the fastest mode of transportation back then was riding a horse, and you didn't want to run a horse. If you ran a horse, you're probably going to kill it. You want to maybe trot it, but if you're trotting it, what are you doing? Maybe 5 miles an hour at most? So it would take you hours to go just visit your next-door neighbor. So you're out there isolated by yourself, and your husband's out, you know, working the farm, and you're making sure the fire is going 24 hours a day.
It's
so you can cook. It was rough, man.
Well, what do you think it was like in the city where the guy might have worked in the stockyards? That had to be fun. And then the ladies doing everything else at home.
Man, to know how rough it was on the docks.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a good movie too.
Hey, wait a minute! I was on the docks. Not on those docks. On the
JG Braddock went from earning thousands of dollars a fight, maybe one fight a month, to earning $1 a day occasionally on the docks during the Great Depression. That was pretty rough. And they lived in that basement apartment too.
Well, my grandfather ended up, the Depression was like a week after he bought his house.
Wow.
He ended up becoming he got laid off from the railroad. He's a boilermaker, got laid off.
Well, my stepfather, his family ended up in Roseburg, Oregon area because of the Dust Bowl in North Dakota.
Well, it was the only company in Chicago that didn't lay anybody off. It was what, Singer Sewing Machine? Everybody worked 1 day a week or 2 days a week or something. They didn't lay anybody off. You did just
That's
cut
good,
your days.
Yeah.
All right, so all these things, I mean, I guess we kind of get back here. There's whether you like the administration has any chance of solving these problems. I mean, we've kind of gone from problem to problem on the show, and they're kind of right in front of you. I mean, the veterans thing.
I think the solutions are easy. All you got to do is look at India. You mentioned India, where you can get an operation for $5,000 that might cost you $50,000 in America, or look at Los Algodones, Mexico. You go across the border from Yuma. And it's, it's basically it's an example of pure competition in healthcare, dentistry, and pharmacy right across the board.
The only argument you and I ever have, one is I think you're more of a Milton Friedman, you're an Austrian, but the other is I'm absolutely convinced.
Pragmatic Austrian.
Something. And, but the teardown of this stuff, That's why one of the most interesting things Milton Friedman always said is that inflation feels so good for some people. That's why you can never let it get started.
Yeah,
I don't see how you at this point allow the Northwesterns and the four or five companies here in Chicago that now own all the hospitals. You shouldn't have let it get that way. Yeah. I don't know how the hell you tear it down. Somehow or another, the only way around it, I think, and boy, to take a bunch of you guys together, we need to compete them out of the business. And I don't know how you do that. Because like you say, the insurance companies are sort of involved. Example would be is, I don't know if I ever told you this, but I've said it on the show a few times. One of the dudes here in the building, and a real good friend of mine, he has his hernia. And it's in February, right? So now he's got this insurance, he's got this crap policy, where his deductible is like $5,000, and then he's got to pay, I don't know, 20% of the bill. But I tell you what, Hal, I know I'm a conspiracy guy, I don't have a tin hat, but you can't tell me that they're sending you the same bill they send the insurance company.
Yeah.
I bet they're sending them a much smaller bill than the 20% you're paying. Yeah. Anyway, so he says to me, I can go to, wasn't Northwestern, but it was a pretty big hospital. I can go and they want, what the hell do they want? They wanted $6,000 or something, which means he had to pay the full $5,000 copay. Or he could go to like one of these surgery centers that are probably just as good, maybe better, and they wanted $2,200. Because this was, well, allegedly, it was, there's no such thing as a simple hernia on you, but on somebody else, it can be a simple hernia. It was just one spot, and it was, it's going to be out of work for a couple of weeks and, be good to go in a while. So it wasn't like they had to redo his whole abdomen or anything like that. So he says to me, what should I do? So I get out the pencil and piece of paper, and I'm going, I can't tell you. He goes, what do you mean? You're supposed to know all this stuff. And I go, these guys are so good. I don't know that you don't want to pay the deductible. Because if something else happens, this kid plays soccer. The kid breaks an ankle tomorrow, you just paid $2,500 out of pocket to get this done. Now you still owe the $5,000. Right? So I don't know that if it was December, I would say take a chance. If you haven't used any deductible, go get it done for $2,500 and just pay for it. But it wasn't December. It was February. And I'm sitting there going, here's Mr. MBA, supposedly smart guy. The insurance companies had me stumped. Hell, they had the exact number. And I'm sitting there going, I think you're better off paying the $5,000. Because you can't take the chance that nothing's going to happen in the next 11 months.
Yeah.
What would you say on something like, but these guys are so good.
Yeah, if you pay the $2,500 in February, your deductible is effectively $7,500.
Yeah. So, they were so good at it, Hal. That's what you're saying. It's not just the procedure that's more money. It's who pays for what, where. Between the insurance
and when.
Yeah, and when. And it's all piling up on the top of all this stuff.
Yeah.
Not to mention, if the procedure doesn't work, I just had a 91st birthday party from my cousin. Terrific guy. He's pretty much been his entire 91 years never been sick. Except because he played halfback for Tilden Tech and the University of Colorado. One of his knees was shot. Imagine that. And of course, neither Chicago Public Schools or University of Colorado paid for his knee replacement. You get some guy and the guy butchers the knee replacement. So my cousin being a Southside guy and having confidence in people, which I've learned to maybe not do, he goes back to the same guy to get it fixed. The guy screws it up the second time. So now he's got basically one good leg, and the guy used to be a halfback. And he's been dealing with it for 20 years. Won't sue the guy, won't find a third guy. Well, now I don't think they can do anything, but, I mean, so the guy had the nerve to charge him for the second surgery.
Yeah.
In what other business, if you go in and to get a tune-up on your car and the guy puts in the wrong part and you bring it back, I don't think the guy charges you to make it right, do they? Yet in the medical... Yeah.
This goes back to this idea that licensing is necessary, and this is a Milton Friedman argument.
Yeah.
Licensing is necessary to ensure quality. A license doesn't indicate quality whatsoever. There was I read about this medical doctor in the antebellum South. He was a black man. He was a slave. He operated a clinic in Tennessee, and I think he earned enough money to buy himself free. And it's probably one of the reasons why Tennessee is a heavily licensed state. They have licenses for everything from what I remember. It may have changed, but they have this legacy of licensing. It goes back to, I think, this one doctor. And it was in a book by Thomas Sowell or Walter Williams, I forget. I came across it teaching the economics of discrimination. And this medical doctor,
that had been interesting,
really good. He was really good, and he had black and white patients. Well, of course, the white doctors in the state don't like the fact that a black man, maybe a slave at the time, was outcompeting them. So they create these licensing systems that eliminate his ability to practice in the state. And the American Medical Association had to apologize in 2009 because its efforts in the early part of the 20th century closed all but two black medical schools. And then they would only issue, surprisingly, medical licenses to white, male, probably Christian doctors. And they eliminated the competition from Jewish doctors, female doctors, and black doctors. So licensing, that is the history of licensing. It is not, has nothing to do with quality. The quality is a smokescreen. Licensing does one thing. It restricts the supply to push the price up the demand curve. That's what licensing does.
Well, it could be just so they can tax you. But you're right. I'll have to be this cagey here because we had a client, and unfortunately passed. He was a, what do you call a guy who's a pulmonary surgeon, chest yeah. cutter? What they say in MASH, we need a chest cutter? He was a chest cutter.
Yeah, yeah.
And he came here from Okinawa or Singapore or someplace. And he's a full-fledged doctor, right? So he gets here and he's working this hospital. He's working his way up. Finally, they offer him the chair of the department. He goes, well, you better get me certified first. So somehow they do. He's the chair of the department. He must have taken his boards and passed them, I'm sure. And all of a sudden, but they're like, "You've never been certified. You've been here 20 years, and you're like our best guy."
There's a series on Apple TV called Invasion, and this Muslim—I think she's Muslim. Her husband has a Middle Eastern name, and he's having an affair, and she was going to be a medical doctor, and she got out of medical school. And she was interning, and then she got married and had kids, so she never got her license. Well, in the series, about episode 3 or 4 in the first season, they're asking for doctors because it's an alien invasion, right? And they need doctors. And she says, I'm a doctor. And she ends up being the best doctor in the room, and she's not licensed. The licensed doctors weren't anywhere close as good as her, right? So licensing is an illusion. It is just an economic tool that limits access to a profession. And here's another example. I had a friend from high school. Her dad was a New Yorker, and her mom was from Korea, and they met in the Korean War, and they moved to Oregon. So it was quite interesting family in North Central Oregon. And she, the daughter, my classmate, was in nursing school, and she told me, man, I can't believe it. I have to take algebra now because the licensing board says you have to take algebra now, college algebra now, to be a licensed nurse. And I go, do you use math at all? And she goes, yeah, we do like ratios and percentages. And I go, And this is before I had any economics training. It was when I was in the Navy. And I told her, well, that's just because they want to limit the number of people who can become nurses in the state of Oregon.
Well, sure.
So they're making it more difficult.
Well, the they is probably the nursing community. I mean, Milton Friedman, yeah. he constantly ragged on two.
The people that run the Nursing Association Oregon are making it more restrictive to enter the profession. Well, because they want to drive up their salaries.
His two big rag things were taxi cabs, the city regulated amount of those, and the doctors, where the medical community got to certify medical schools, and it shouldn't really be their call. There's some kind of licensing. When you say licensing, like if you go to, you know, I have a guy I've been going to in a while because they're so busy. These guys in Orland have a really nice auto mechanics place. Now, they're licensed to do business in Orland as an auto mechanic. I mean, you and I could open up a shop tomorrow. Who knows what they hit you up for the license? Say it's $200 to put it on the wall, but it's not any sort of a. They're not. You know, still he has all his diplomas from Moraine Valley. I went to fuel injection school. I went to brake school. That has nothing to do with Orland. I mean, in other words. For the Orland to know how many doctors are operating in town, I don't know that that's such a bad idea for a license. But if the license becomes restrictive, then that's different. What you're talking about something different than how a license, you know, could be. I mean, you and I could open up a hot dog stand and have to pay $200 for a license. But the fact is, they're not telling us how to cook the hot dogs. They're not saying our hot dogs are good. They're just knowing that we have a hot dog stand, which is kind of splits on that. I'm not saying it's terrific.
That's where it starts, but then it metastasizes.
Like
in the state of Utah, there was this African woman who was on John Stossel's show, and she just wanted to open up a braiding store where she braided African women's hair. And if I'm married to a black woman, so I understand the hair issues that black women have. And so she opens up the store to help all these black women in Utah. And Utah is a place where there's a high number of refugees from Africa. You wouldn't expect it, but there is. And there's a
Haitian community. No, she was a member of the church. They wouldn't have bugged her.
Yeah. Well, there's a Haitian community in Ogden, too. So she was just braiding hair. And the state of Utah said she had to do 2,000 hours of training to get a license to braid African women's hair. And she was on a Stossel's show, and she goes, yeah, the 2,000 hours had nothing to do with how to braid hair better. It was just a hoop she had to go through. Why is that in place? Because they want to limit the number of people who can legally perform a service or supply a product in the state of Utah. And that drives up the price.
Well,
drives up the price of hair braiding.
Well, it gets to the absurd. My buddy, I'll just say Dr. Billy, he's a guy that is one of the top pick a part of your body surgeons, hand, foot, whatever I'm going to say, because people might know who I'm talking about. And he had to go get his, you know, the big board you got to take every 10 years or whatever it is for a doctor. Yeah. And he's studying for him. He's bitching a blue streak. He goes, why can't I just put on the top of this thing, I will never treat cancer. I will never operate on your foot. I will never take out your appendix. I just two hands. And he goes, I'll take that test in 10 minutes. He goes, but I don't. What do I need to do all this other stuff for? Just
be it systematically eliminates the competition for the people who are really good at taking tests. They may not be very good doctors, but boy, can they take a test, right?
Well, you know where there's some.
You want a test taker operating on you, or you want a guy that has skills in his hands, like. You know, we were talking about MASH earlier. What was the sarcastic doctor?
Oh, Hawkeye.
Hawkeye. You want a Hawkeye doing surgery on you? Or you want some guy that's really good at taking tests? There's a difference.
Yeah.
Right? There are people who are good with their hands and creative with their minds. They can find multiple solutions to a problem. And there are people who can take tests.
Well, you know, there's a little tension in some of these places is the best surgeons aren't necessarily the best Zamboni drivers for these machine surgery things.
Yeah, yeah.
And talk a little bit about the market. Gold, silver to the moon. Silver's up again today, $1.41. We're talking 2% on something that moved. We used to move like 1% a year. Where does with all this stuff going on? People going to tankers, and my buddy Tom Shanahan, he's been on the show, sent me a thing the other day about why oil prices are down like this. And he was talking about the world is absolutely awash in oil. There's, what's the country next to Venezuela? It used to be the three countries, and they all got the same name now. Oh, they're exporting like 1 million barrels a week or something.
Isn't it the country where the Steve McQueen movie took place?
Yeah, what was the one where there were the three, whatever, but it's
Papillon?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
But I mean,
they have tons of oil.
Yeah, and he says, in this article, basically talked about all these countries now that are exporting oil, either didn't do as much or didn't. I mean, granted, Venezuela's not doing near as much because, you know, they got that ridiculous regime. You know, Russia's screwing around trying to sell it to people. It's basically the amount of oil being pushed out per day is you know, at all-time high levels. That's why the price is down. It's not.
And I guarantee American drillers do not like it.
No.
They want the administration to crack down on and restrict oil. Because they can't make a profit. So, you know, that's what we need. What we need is more competition in healthcare. We need more competition in insurance.
But every day there's a merger, and every day another one goes by.
Yep. Yeah.
And I don't see how.
Less and less competition.
Well, that's what we're talking about. And by the way, next week we'll tee it up again. Where do you start? I mean, do you start by.
Where I'd start with is allowing Amazon and Walmart to provide, like, either expand their drug or maybe even offer up clinics. Because if anybody can save or cost cut, it would be Amazon and Walmart. I would tell Walmart and Amazon, hey, go create some
I don't. Those guys are big enough. I don't need them being, because they're already. Then they're going to buy all the newspapers. They're going to buy all the other. I don't want a plutocracy.
I know, but they're really good. You only need one competitor, and if Amazon and Walmart are competing for surgical services and general practitioner services, that's a good thing.
You may want to get your appendix out in a Walmart. I'm not sure I do.
Well, but Walmart doesn't want to be sued, right? That's the thing. Walmart and Amazon don't want to be sued for malpractice. And that's the thing. That's the thing that keeps, you know, these kinds of services, these kinds of products accountable, is the ability to be sued if harm is done. That's why these pharmaceutical companies are making so much money off these so-called vaccines. Yeah, as Carl calls them, clot shots.
Now you've got me screwed
because
up.
Because they can't be sued.
You've got me screwed up for the whole day now. We're thinking of being the aisle at Walmart. Anything else you need? Yeah, here's $500. I'm going to go get my appendix.
Hey, I think Walmart and Amazon would do a fabulous job with dental services. They do tax services. There's banks in Walmart. They have their own card for poor people, debit cards for poor people.
They have places where you get your eyeglasses and stuff. They're not that much cheaper.
I know, but still, I can just see McDonald's. I can see McDonald's. I'd like to see McDonald's build it, get into this space.
You're going
to
get your appendectomy at the McDonald's?
It's kind of ironic, right? I'm going to eat a Big Mac and then I'm going to go get my heart surgery.
You come out of surgery, they hand you a quarter pounder. What the hell?
Any company that is as good as cost cutting as McDonald's, Walmart, and Amazon, I'm all in favor of letting them do whatever they want to do, man.
Oh, God. S&P futures down 13. Nasdaq futures down 65.
Hey, what? I might be in Gitmo next week. Because the pharmaceutical companies don't like what I'm saying.
Oh God! Well, if you are, we'll come. How do we get you out of Gitmo? We got to beam you out of Gitmo.
I'll be on an extended vacation there.
Oh God!
Involuntary.
Well, you have a nice holiday, bud. We'll talk to you next week. Who do you got coming over? Where are you going to be?
My in-laws are in town from last Thursday through the 31st.
Well, so they came to you. Well, good for you.
Yeah.
All right, bud. S&P futures down 13. Nasdaq is down 67. Back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.